Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Woo-woo! Good morning, everybody. Hope your day is off to a fantastic start. Hope you're getting off to a great week as well. How are you guys doing this morning? Is your artist in residency?
Oh, man, I'm good. I'm straight. I'm just sitting back, slowly watching different cities, different counties, different states open up slowly, watching places like South Orange County, watching you guys down there kind of, you know, open up a little bit here and there. And
we're trying.
Looking at your beaches as if it never went away. Like this is the middle of the summer where y'all acting.
they're nice beaches down here. We want to use them. We're ready to get back to work.
I get it. I understand. I'm not knocking that. It's just funny.
It's happening everywhere, maybe it's happening a little faster down here than some other places, but these are all good signs, guys, that we're getting a little bit closer to going to the beach or whatever it is we like. These are all good signs.
Well, here in Arizona, the artist in residence order is lifted tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure where, if anywhere, I'm going to go. But it is nice to know that there's, if I wanted to go somewhere, I can. You know, like part of the cabin fever, part of the reason why you get agitated isn't because you want to go somewhere every day. You just want to have the option to go somewhere every day.
Sure.
Nothing else. And it'd be nice to know that I got options besides, the Whole Foods and Home Depot.
y'all got a Whole Foods out there?
Maybe you got to be a Whole Foods. There's almost a Whole Foods on every corner. You know, Scottsdale is basically a bunch of strip malls connected by highway and desert, right?
No, I know.
That's exactly what it is.
That's like when you go to Dallas. Dallas there's is like a strip mall on every corner.
Every corner. There's a Wells Fargo, a Chase, a Whole Foods, and some either a Walgreens or a CVS every five blocks, I guess. So, you know, it'd be nice to know that, you know, there are other things out there that I can do if I so choose to.
Key, what was in the Johnson Cineplex last night? I know you guys had a whole setup with tickets and assigned seating thing. But what wasn't there was what was on the screen.
Man, I forgot the name of the movie, man.
It must not have been very good.
No, it was that Eddie Murphy memorable. Movie. I'll get it before we get off the air. I just forgot the name of it, the start of it.
Just tell me what happened, because I've seen everyone.
It was a little girl. Eddie Murphy was a financial, I guess he was like a financial expert, and he had a little girl. He was in a divorce situation or a separation.
Oh, I've seen that.
I can't either. It had me laughing. The little black girl has special powers because the imagination of the blanket, and she was giving him tips.
Wait, hold on. And he was like taking her tips and then going back and making big money?
Yes. Or giving the proper advice.
Imagine this. It's imagine something.
Yeah, it was pretty cool though, because she was giving the advice. He was a bad dad at first by not paying her any attention or giving her any love. And at the end of the day, because of her special powers or what you want to call it, She helped him rise the chain at the firm, and there was another guy who was like this Indian dude or something, and he was like trying to use his special powers, and it didn't work. And so it was good though. You saw it, LZ.
I've seen it too.
I've seen every Eddie Murphy movie, good and bad. So that's why I figured if you just told me a little bit, because Jorge said just imagine that. I thought it was imagine this, but it's imagine that.
Yeah. But my daughter started off in the daytime. She wanted to have a movie night, and she said, "Hey, let's have a movie night." I said, "Cool." And so at 6 o'clock, you know, obviously made dinner and whatnot, and then she set up her whole deal with the tickets, and I was wondering why she kept coming to my office printing stuff, and I wasn't really paying attention. But she was printing out tickets and printing out this and doing a whole deal, and she was taking
That's
orders.
That's so cool.
Yeah, she was taking orders and cooked the popcorn and made the sundaes.
Was there drink service?
No alcohol beverages, only lemonade. And
that's not my kind of movie theater.
And so, you know, she charged $1 for each entry, had a gate. The dogs were free.
Oh,
she was checking ID.
All right.
And then along
that's
the way,
smart. That's good business.
As
right
I ate
there.
The popcorn, you know, I didn't want a sundae, so I asked her, did they happen to have any celery and carrot sticks and ranch? And she went to check the kitchen and came back and said that they don't have it on the menu, but the chef certainly could figure out how to make you something.
So she's not only the general manager, she's also the waitress and the chef, and she's running the whole place.
She took the role of the guy from Are We Done Yet? She took that role from that one guy who was taking, he had like 12 different roles. He was a doctor, he was a county supervisor, he was a builder, he was a fire department. And that's what she was doing. She was everything, but it was fun. It was a really good movie, though. I actually liked the movie a lot.
All right, so here's some more good news, guys, when it comes to when we're going to get some games back, hopefully, fingers crossed. A report from Bob Nightingale in USA Today that Major League Baseball is considering a plan that would have the season start by the 2nd of July at the latest, potentially even a little bit before then. The season would include 100 games, that there would be three different sites to start with, that maybe they could ultimately go back to their own homes. But what they would do to limit travel, or at least a significant amount of travel, is basically they're going to cut the country into thirds. They're going to have the Eastern Division, they're going to have the Western Division, and then everybody in the middle is going to be in the Central Division. And all of the things that we've come to know about American League and National League, they're out the window, at least for a season. For instance, in the West, the 10 teams in the Western Division would be the Dodgers, the Angels, the Giants, the A's, the Padres, the Diamondbacks, the Rockies, Rangers, Astros, and Mariners. So you have five American League teams, five National League teams, but that would be your MLB Western Division. What do you guys make of the plan?
I think it's good. I think it's a good plan. It seems like it'll cut down on travel. You know, you could try, it's a short distance, basically, the way things are going. The furthest point is Seattle. The north, and the furthest point south is San Diego, right? And in between, you got Colorado and Arizona. Mm-hmm. So I think that when you look at what they're trying to do to get baseball back on, I think this is the best plan that they've put out.
So why are the Colorado Rockies west, but the Kansas City Royals are central?
Well, I think they're trying to keep some semblance of familiarity where they can. But, I mean, Denver is slightly more west than Kansas City. You got to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean,
I just don't like Colorado.
Well, no, you know, there's two things that jump out at me. Three things, actually, that jump out at me at this. Number one, I think it would be a lot of fun to have the Dodgers and the Angels in a division, opposed to the six games they play in the Freeway Series, which are mildly interesting at best. The Angels, you know, I'm knocking on wood here. The Angels should be pretty good this year. They made some moves. If Shohei Ohtani comes back healthy and can pitch, and the addition of Rendon, that's a pretty good team. So you could have a Dodger and Angel rivalry, and you're not only just doing it for bragging rights, you're doing it to win a division potentially. That's number one. Number two, obviously the Astros in this same division. The Dodgers and Astros hate each other, or at least the Dodgers hate them, and the Astros are arrogant you-know-whats. So you have that. They were not scheduled to play in 2020. Now they would be in the same division and play each other a couple of dozen times potentially. That's a big deal because the Dodgers could extract whatever vengeance they want on the Astros directly. Before, it was going to have to be indirect through other teams, other confrontations. But now head-to-head, they get to go at the Astros. I can't wait for that potentially.
Why would they play Houston instead? I'm like you, LZ. Well, you should put Kansas City in there and take Houston out, just from a geographic standpoint, right?
Houston is a little bit further east than Kansas City, but keep in mind, Kansas City's a little further west, though, right? But they're no, you're Kansas City is in the American League Central. These aren't perfect breakdowns, but what they're doing, the Western Division is the National League and American League West combined, basically.
Got it. The Central is
the American League Central and National League Central combined, basically. They're just putting those divisions together.
Okay. Okay, got it.
So, well, they get to go head to head.
For me,
look, go ahead, LZ. Sorry.
No. I was just going to say, from a rivalry perspective, you're right, Travis, in the sense of you do get some interesting storylines with the Astros, the Houston Asterix, as we like to call them, and then you get sort of like a city series with the Angels. My only question is, is, you know, just the breakdown of the math in terms of is whenever there's three of something, you always wonder, okay, what's out? You know what I'm saying? But I know in terms of postseason organization, the numbers will be even. Doesn't really matter East, West, or Central. Doesn't matter. I just want baseball. And while I'll be disappointed that I won't be able to likely go to the stadium and boo Houston the way I really want to, I'm pretty sure that with enough liquor in me, they'll hear me from my television at home. So I'm good with this.
You can always get a bullhorn and stand outside the stadium.
Well, there's one other element to this, too. And that is that the Western Division has exactly 2.5 good teams in it. It's the Dodgers, the Astros, and maybe the Angels if they stay healthy. The other 7 teams in that division are not very good. I mean, so the Dodgers have a relatively clear path to whatever form in the postseason that we can get.
Wouldn't that be the same if they was in their regular division, though?
Yes, but what I'm saying is that they didn't realign it in a way where all of a sudden you've got some sluggers and some heavy hitters in there. You still have it set up to where you're in pretty good shape. And even with adding the American League, I mean, you look at it. The Texas Rangers are not very good. The Seattle Mariners are not very good. The A's are okay, but the A's really don't scare you all that much. The Astros are the only team that comes into the pool with a chance to do any damage.
Right now, on paper.
Yes.
As to your point, we don't know what the Angels are going to be. We don't know what a healthy Ohtani is going to do. We don't know what the remade roster of the Angels is going to do. So that is exciting to see. And oh, by the way, it'd just be good for the Angels just in general, because in this format, I'm presuming people actually will see them play. And as opposed to the situation last year where they had all this talent but no one gave a damn, maybe with the restructuring, this temporary restructuring can help elevate their status so that next season when things return to normal, people actually will be a little bit more invested in what they're trying to do, because they have a lot of talent, world-class talent. Some would say Hall of Fame talent if you look at Trout. So it will be nice for them to actually matter, and hopefully this is a format in which they'll get a chance to do that.
And by the way, July 2nd is the target date, which feels like a million years, but that's pretty close along the way.
If this stays clean and it comes off well, is this what we're going to see from here on out? Or is it going back? Or is it going back to the normal way?
Great question. Let's pick that up on the other side, because that not only that, and what would it mean if you won a championship setup like this? We'll do that next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, Key, so you said, you know, what happens if we play the baseball season like it's being floated right now? And again, very quickly, the idea is instead of having a National League with 3 divisions and an American League with 3 divisions, you just have 3 divisions and there's no American League or National League distinction. That the West would be the American League West and National League West combined into one division. Dodgers, Angels, Giants, A's, Padres, D-backs, Rockies, Rangers, Astros, and Mariners. And the other areas would be similar. I think, like we talked about with the draft, we've heard some people say, hey, this went really, really well. I like this element of that. I like looking into people's homes. I like getting to see these players with their friends and family and loved ones. I do think that if they did something this radically different, there would be a piece of this that you say, you know what? Hey, what if we tweak this? I don't think you would ever have this long term, but I think it's a pretty reasonable assumption to think that it would be different moving forward after this if this works reasonably well.
And if it does work reasonably well, I don't see why you wouldn't. It makes sense to me to do it that way. It cuts down, you know, and every now and then you may want to somehow figure out how the Yankees can play the Dodgers or the Sox can play the Dodgers. You know, that you want every now and then maybe do something like that in terms of interleague play. But at the same time, I think it makes sense. Not only from an economic standpoint, you cut down on your travel costs, you cut down on a lot of different things. People, you know, you get a chance to, you know, if a fan decides that he wants to drive from Oakland to Colorado to see them play, they get an opportunity to do that. If a person decides that they want to drive, you know, from Colorado to L.A., you get a chance to see that. Or Anaheim to L.A., L.A. to Anaheim, San Diego, Anaheim. You get a chance to do all of those things. I think it's a good idea, though. I really do. And if it goes out without any sort of hiccup and then there's no glitch in it and it's smooth and it looks like baseball, then why wouldn't you keep it that way? Who says you can't change?
I think what you said is the big reason why. Because teams, and look, we're in a little bit of a unique situation in that we're all fans of a team that is the draw. The Dodgers are the draw. We love the Dodgers, and people, when the Dodgers go to Chicago, Dodger fans go to Wrigley Field. When the Dodgers go to play the Mets in New York, people come to see the Dodgers at Citibank Field. But if you're a team like the A's, if you're a team like the Padres, you have to have the Cubs come in. You have to have the Cardinals come in. These are the teams that people come to see, despite the fact that they live in a different city. You got to get the traffic of those teams through your buildings, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, at the end of the day, I don't care if it's the East, West, North, South, up, down, left, or right. I just want them to play. And I don't believe that fans in particular are really going to care that the history of banners is going to be interrupted by this new formatting that's temporary. Mm-hmm. Now, I do believe, given baseball's tendency to be slothful and change, that they're not going to look at this year, success measures or not, and decide they're going to radically change what they've been doing for so many years. Baseball just isn't nimble that way. I can certainly see enough voices requiring that we go back to the sixth division alignment because of the history of winning that banner for your division and blah, 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 blah. I can totally see that argument, whether this version of baseball works better or not. Baseball, to me, has just been so stubborn to change, even change for good. I doubt that they would actually be more up for adopting this new format going forward.
That's an interesting question. The idea of, look, somebody, let's assume that this format launches, right? And that this is the way that the 2020 Major League Baseball season is played. Somebody's going to win the World Series. Okay, so it's going to happen. And let's be honest again, the Dodgers are a very good pick to be that somebody. Does it feel less than? I mean, the only thing that's close that I can think of in recent memories is you go back when was it the Spurs that won that championship in that shortened season?
I was going to say, yes, yep. It was the 99-50 game season.
Right. So they played a 50 game season in Major League Baseball, or excuse me, in the NBA instead of 82. So you had a fraction of a season. The Spurs end up winning that thing. And had that been their only one, maybe you say, okay, that's kind of a weird one because it was an unusual circumstance. But we don't look at that Spurs championship, especially 20 some odd years later, and say, oh, that one doesn't count. Part of it is because they went and they won four more, but part of it is just that, hey, it's on the wall. It says they won the championship. It doesn't say they won the championship after a 50 game season.
No, I didn't. If you don't say it, I don't even think about it. I just think about they won the championship. I don't count how many games they played to get to the championship. What are you going to do this year if the NBA decides to go back and cut down the regular season and go right into the playoffs? What are you going to say? The Lakers didn't win the championship because they only played, I don't know, 65 games or whatever it is.
But could the flip be said true, Keith? And what I mean is that, let's say the Lakers, for whatever reason, let's say that the NBA comes back in a month, and that the Lakers just, for whatever reason, they're not clicking. The groove that they were in is gone, and they get beat. And let's say they get beat by a weird team. Maybe not Memphis, because that just doesn't seem like a realistic
whatever
scenario.
Whatever the eighth seed is,
but,
or whatever.
Yeah, but let's say they go into the second round and they get beat in the second round. I do think that Laker fans, at least, we say, yeah, this, I mean, it sucks that they got eliminated, but there's also a gigantic reason why they're out. And I think that they would look at this season as an asset. You win it, they're obviously not going to feel that way. But if you lose it, you're going to look at whoever does win it and say, yeah, but.
Yeah, of course. That's just for your own personal self to say that. It's just like the Lakers lost to the Chicago Bulls and Worthy didn't play. So, Worthy got hurt. If he'd have played, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you could do that all day long, though, Travis, with yeah, whatever.
Are injuries not different? Injuries are a part of sports. It happens. This is they shut the league down for 3 months and then and try to kickstart it there at the end. That is just a totally different dynamic.
No, you could, but you could say it that way and make it that way and condition your mind to believe that it's different. But at the same time, it still was an obstacle that was in your way that deterred you from winning a championship, whether it was Worthy, whether it was a pandemic, whether it was a 50-game shortened season, whatever you want to call it. You can frame it how you want to if you want to play with your mind that way. At the end of the day, a champion is crowned based on the postseason and being in the postseason and playing. I don't care if you had a halt in the season for 3, 4, 5 months, 2 weeks, whatever the case is. When you get into the tournament and you don't advance, you just lost. There's no excuses to it.
I, I think as long as everyone's on the same footing when we start up again, whether we start up again in the postseason or try to have some fractured regular season before the postseason, no one's going to think about the fact that you somehow had an advantage over another team because things were interrupted, because we're all starting on the same footing. I think when it comes to injuries, whether it's James Worthy's sprained ankle, you know, game one of 91 finals, Isaiah Thomas sprained ankle, there's a whole host of injuries we can point back to that interrupted finals. This, we just had an NBA finals that was filled with injuries that interrupted what should have been. That's different because you can rationalize saying this freak accident derailed our team. But if a season is stopped and then started up again, everyone's on equal footing. And I don't see any asterisks coming because we're all on the same boat.
The best part of the whole story is July 2. That's the part that keeps jumping out at me. 100-game season, and it starts July 2, potentially. That's the one that makes me feel very, very good about this entire process. Wait, and everybody's moving forward. I love
Travis,
it.
Hold
I
on. Absolutely. Hold on, Charlie. I need to check my schedule. Okay, I'm free July 2nd. Okay. All right.
You're there for the July 2nd.
So July 2nd. So when will they start spring training? Or not spring training?
They say they need about 4 weeks. So let's just say that round it off to a month somewhere in the middle of June, you know, early to mid-June.
So they're going to get back at it then.
Yeah, but think about it. I mean, mid-June, I know that our timelines are just totally blown to hell, but mid-June is only a few weeks away. I mean, it's May at the end of this week. We're almost there. And maybe I'm trying to convince myself of something that's not true, but I need this fantasy here for at least a minute. All right, another player, a very, very good player, has decided to forego college basketball player. Is college basketball as we know it dead? That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
So we've seen it a little bit, guys. We've seen it a little bit where some very good high school basketball players are opting to go to the G League as opposed to going into their 1 year of mandatory college basketball. It happened again. A five-star recruit that was committed to UCLA has decommitted from UCLA and is now headed to the NBA's G League. Dacian Nix is the guy the latest guy who's made that decision. And I know it's not everybody, but it does seem like it's happening more and more frequently. And you have to wonder if college basketball as we know it isn't in big, big trouble, because the very best players, it feels like, are more frequently choosing a minor league path as opposed to the college path.
Well, you're only talking about a handful of guys, though, Travis. You're only going to talk about four guys. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, 200 guys here, and there's only a handful of guys that have the luxury of being one, not necessarily one and done, but high school to college, I mean high school to pro entry. There's only a handful of guys, and you see in those handful of guys that have that ability to do that. Other than that, guys are going to go to college. Parents want guys to go to college. Everybody can't go to the pros right out of high school and make themselves whatever $300,000-$500,000. They've got to go to college to continue to hone their skills, because remember, those G Leagues, they got some grown ass men playing too. Mm-hmm. It ain't just junior high and high school kids. I mean, it ain't junior high and high school kids. These grown men at 3-4. What's the dude that played for the Lakers?
What was this? The guy with the gray hair made the threes. Yeah,
you got grown kids, man.
Yeah.
So that's what you up against. You can't just take a high school kid that says, I don't want to go to college and play basketball. That's a solid basketball player that could play at USC or Oregon, who can get an education. I'm going to go to the G League. And G League ain't going to accept him.
No. I understand that, and I completely agree. The difference is a guy like Zion, right? A guy like Zion, who was the reason a bunch of people turned on their TVs to watch a college basketball game, is no longer going to go to Duke for his apprenticeship. He's going to go to the G League. A guy like Daishan Nix is going to go to the G League for his apprenticeship. There's always, I'm not saying that it's going to disappear. I'm saying that the reason that we watch these games and care about these games is for the guys that are the one and dones. I know that, like, if you're a fan of your team, I get it. You're going to watch your team. But as a, when college basketball was its best, it was filled with stars and we knew them. Now we went to an area where we might get a star once in a while, or a guy like Zion who we'd watch a little bit. And now it just seems like more and more we're going to go to a sport where it's only those guys that are there that, yeah, I'm going to play basketball, but I'm also going to go become an English teacher. I don't really want to watch that. I want to watch the stars. I want to watch the best players, and the best players are not going to be there anymore.
Well, I think one of the things that has already, you know, sort of hit the death toll with death note when it comes to college basketball is the simple fact that, to your point, Travis, we don't know who the vast majority of these guys are. And we're not going to know next year either. We used to be able to follow someone, you know, at least Michael Jordan made it to his junior year, Christian Laettner, Kareem, Bill Walton. Like, all the iconic college basketball players are iconic because they lasted so long. Shaq wasn't a one and done. So when you think about where basketball, how basketball had just slid, just in terms of just the regular person kind of knowing what's going on, it's been years, a good 10 plus years, since college basketball has really penetrated that way outside of March Madness. Remember, before, back in the day, you would get excited about regular season matchups.
Sure.
Every single UNC-Duke game was an event. Now it's like, All right, okay. They're playing, and if I'm available, I'll watch, perhaps, whereas before, it was appointment television. So college basketball has been hemorrhaging, as far as I'm concerned, for years, and now with the G League, if I had a son that was trying to decide between playing for Mike Krzyzewski or going to the G League, if Mike wants you, then we're going to the G League. Now, if Western Michigan called, I'd be like, going, yeah, you need to go to Kalamazoo. but any top tier program, if John Calipari shows up at my doorstep, I'm walking straight to the G League, because that means he thinks my kid is at very least a one and done. So why be bothered with the one?
It all depends, LZ. It's all kind of like circumstantial. I just faced this last year being able to communicate with my longtime agent in Jerome Stanley and his son Cassius Stanley on the decision to be made whether to go to Duke or whether to go overseas and play like LaMelo Ball. And one of the things that I continue to come back to is, you know, it's Duke. It's a 6-month education, but it's an alignment. It's a connection. It's a brotherhood. It's Mike Krzyzewski. It's the guy who says yes, they say okay. You take that and you run with it, opposed to $300,000, $400,000 to go to the G League and you never really reach your potential in the G League, and then all of a sudden you cast aside. But that's not for everybody. Everybody doesn't want to do that. It's just, you know, everybody doesn't want to do it.
Everybody doesn't want to do it, but it's becoming more of a trend. Nix is the third guy from this class, from the 2020 class, to go and say no to college and yes to the G League. Jalen Green, the number one prospect overall, is going to the G League. Isaiah Todd, a 5-star player, is going straight to the G League. Nix reneged on a letter of intent to UCLA. He's going to the G League. This isn't just a guy here.
I would renege on a letter of intent to UCLA, too.
But we're talking about three of the very best players in America that are saying, you know what? No, this is a problem.
But that's what's going to happen, though. That's why I said to you earlier, though, Travis, you're going to always get three or four dudes that can make that leap. You're going to get that. That would have been the case 10 years ago if the rule was still in place. That would have been the case 5 years ago if this rule was in place. You would have gotten that. Zion would have did that a year ago if the rule was in place. He elected not to be a 17-year-old kid and go overseas and play. His family decided it was best to go to college for 1 year or one basketball season and play. Some guys, LaMelo Ball, went to Australia. Other guys, Moutier go to Japan or something, or China to play when he did it? So every kid does it differently because the rules were not in place. Now that the rules are in place, you won't see kids going overseas. The only reason why LaMelo Ball did it is because the rule wasn't in place. Now that the rule is in place, hey, why not go to the G League and do it?
Well, here, the other part of it becomes, too, is when the NBA starts to throw some more money at the G League, and instead of coming over here, that if I can tell you, hey, look, don't go to UCLA. Come over here, and we'll pay you. We're going to pay you maybe not like an NBA player, but we're going to give you a signing bonus, and we're going to get you ready to come and join this team or that team. Then all of a sudden, more and more guys are going to leave. And because, look, like you said, you're talking about the guy
but the
that
more
was
and more,
with the
but
Lakers
remember, though,
a couple
Travis,
of years ago. That guy that's making the money here, the Lakers don't have any interest in a 30-something. They do have interest in, if I have a bunch of 19-year-olds and I can pick a few of those 19-year-olds, I know what the 30-year-old guy is. I don't need to worry about him. But if I can have a crop of 19-year-old guys and look at those and say, that guy right there might be something that I need, that becomes minor leagues. That's like baseball where you just take a whole bunch of guys and figure it out and you just skip the process altogether.
Yeah, but remember, though, it's always a cap in the talent, and there's a drop-off significantly when you get past certain guys. There's a huge drop-off. No matter what we think about them as players, the executives in these leagues think about them differently. So when you make that chance, I mean, you take that chance and seize that opportunity to go to the G League, you better be right, because you might still be sitting in the G League just like the minor leagues in baseball. You'll be sitting there 10 years before you get called up. You'd be 29 years old.
But you know what? That's okay.
Yeah.
That is okay. If your dream is to be a professional basketball player, but obviously you want to be in the NBA, but if you don't get all the way to the top, you still were a professional basketball player. You still had an opportunity to get really close to your dream.
But they would argue.
You may not get that opportunity if you went to college.
You know what the argument would be, though, is that if you'd have gone to college, you'd have spent more time developing your skills to be ready. When you're in the pros, they don't have time to develop your skills for you to get ready. They already
I don't know about
you
that,
ready. That's what the argument's going to be. I'm not saying that. I'm saying if they're taking young talent and they want to develop it to get to the next level, the pros will certainly do that. But the argument is going to be from the high school coaches, the college coaches, the NCAA is college is going to develop you. The pros aren't going to develop you. That's what they're going to say. Not
Andre Ingram was the name of the player from the Lakers that showed
up. Andre Ingram.
150 years old and made some threes. Andre Ingram. Is it starting in Green Bay? Is the LaFleur-Rodgers confrontation that we know is coming, is it already started? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. Hey, don't forget that the next two episodes of The Last Dance coming up on Sunday at 6 o'clock. You can see them on ESPN, stream them on the ESPN app. And if you are at all behind, A, shame on you. How dare you fall behind on The Last Dance? But if you are, you can catch up on episodes 1 through 4 on the ESPN app and streaming on ESPN as well. So make sure that you're ready to go, because when we come back on Monday morning with the show, of course, that's gonna be the topic for sure. And what do you think's next? Is it the Dream Team next, guys? Do you think that's where we jump into episode 5?
Yeah, I think that is. And who's joining us on the show this morning? That was a part
Isaiah
of
Isaiah Thomas.
Part of this
Isaiah Thomas.
Yes.
What time is he joining?
8.
8 o'clock, Isaiah Thomas. Questions. The Isaiah Thomas of the Detroit.
Yeah,
Pistons.
Yes, man, come on.
I got questions. All kinds of questions.
The cheating boys. I ain't going to call them the bad boys. I'm going to call them the cheating boys.
There was a story yesterday that was out, I believe it was on Yahoo, that I read, that they put together all of the different explanations that Isaiah Thomas has offered for refusing that handshake. It was not a good look that there were 4 or 5 different explanations that he's offered. And basically the point of the piece was Michael Jordan basically said this, that the answer changes depending on the tenor of the story surrounding the question.
Listen, this is par for the course for him being Isaiah Thomas, which is part of the reason why, some people distrust him. You know, I've spoken to several people who were very close to a lot of prominent players during Isaiah's heyday. And when you listen to some of these associates talk about their interaction with Isaiah Thomas, you begin to wonder, why was it he called McLavadian long time ago? It sounds as if it was this very sort of sneaky, vicious, smiling your face, stabbing in the back sort of guy. And you can see why a lot of people didn't like him. But with that being said,
like
and
you,
to
huh?
his
okay.
point that he made to Stephen A, that he made to Stephen A, it's like, despite all of that, you still elected me multiple times to represent the Players Association as a player rep. So it's like, there's somewhere the truth is in the middle, that this guy is vilified and hated by Michael Jordan and others, or Michael Jordan is holding onto this handshake a little too long. Isaiah Thomas just can't say I was wrong, but he still is a good dude because they keep voting for him and he keeps showing up on NBA TV and he keeps finding himself in these documentaries.
But what does NBA TV got to do with Michael Jordan and the rest of the guy? You know, NBA TV is a network on its own that's run by the league, has nothing to do with Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, or anybody else that he may have had a rift with. Him being on television has nothing to do with what they feel about him as a person or as a basketball player, right? I mean, it doesn't – what is that? One has nothing to do with the other. Now, when your player reps, when you are voted to be a player rep and things of that nature, yeah, there's a certain vote. Maybe there's 10 guys that don't like you, but there's an overwhelming – majority that do, so you are voted in.
It's a fascinating dynamic, right? Like, you have players who say things about Isaiah. You have players who are cool with Isaiah.
Yes.
He's a polarizing figure. But at the end of the day, this is a Michael Jordan documentary. And the reason why Isaiah Thomas is on tour is because Sunday, Michael Jordan's it was edited so that a significant chunk of the documentary criticized Isaiah Thomas and put him in a bad light. I'm not sure Isaiah Thomas would be on tour right now if it wasn't for the fact that
exactly.
he was savagely raked across the coals on Sunday. So he's just trying to come up and push back a little bit because there are a lot of good things about Isaiah Thomas and people feel good about him. It's just after Sunday, you couldn't think of anything at that point.
Well, only thing, right, so, it wasn't even that bad. Only thing it was is he didn't shake his hand.
It just dragged up the whole thing that Michael and Isaiah hated. That was used as the jumping off point for Michael Jordan to call him what he called him, for him to say that he's untrustworthy. That was the spark that lit the fire of Michael hates Isaiah.
All Michael said was he's going to change the story because it's convenient now. That's all he said, and all Michael said was that. And Michael said that they didn't shake hands, which was bull. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I can't say it on the air.
Poor sportsmanship, Keith.
Poor sportsmanship. But how is that turning into him being a villain? If anything, Zeke is dragging it on by continuing to do this.
We'll ask him that. We'll ask him all that stuff. Isaiah Thomas is coming up at 8 o'clock.
Shut up,
LZ. Guys. Bob McGinn covered the Packers for 38 years. Okay, he's been around a long time, and he had this quote in a piece in The Athletic talking about why he thinks that the Packers drafted Jordan Love. Quote, public niceties aside, my sense is LaFleur, fresh from a terrific 13-3 baptismal season, simply had enough of Rodgers' act and wanted to change the narrative. With a first-round talent on the roster, the Packers would gain leverage with their imperial quarterback and his passive-aggressive style. If the Packers do indeed want to become a running team next season, they surely wouldn't want Rodgers rocking the boat and becoming even more difficult to coach. Okay, that's the end of the quote. It still seems to be the biggest head-scratcher of the draft, why they decided not only to take Jordan Love, but to move up to take him, as opposed to trying to find a wide receiver, because the Packers are coming off a great season at 13-3, and it doesn't feel like they did anything to make their team better now that this was done in the future. Was it done for that reason, in addition to telling Aaron Rodgers, hey, listen, you're not running the show here, we are?
I don't believe that it was. I know it's fascinating to everybody, and people want to turn it into a story, especially since we don't have live sports, they want to create content. I don't believe that it was done to show Rodgers or put Rodgers in his place. Aaron Rodgers is 38?
Six.
36. 36. He's 36 years old, okay? He doesn't have much football left. I understand that eating avocado ice cream, maybe you can become Tom Brady and play forever or do exercises that no one else does in the world or never seen before. I get all that. That's fine. You can go do special treatments. I got it. But he's 36 years old, man. This guy's not 25. He's 36. 3 years left of money, 4 years left on a contract, and 3 years on a hard cap, a number at $46 million in cap acceleration this year, another number at $32 million the year after. You're not going to part ways with Aaron Rodgers and blow up your entire team with salary cap issues because he frowns at the head coach. No, no, no. This isn't. This is Matt LaFleur's 13-3. Yes, in a rookie season. Oh, he went 13-3 in the NFC Championship game. Yeah, and Aaron Rodgers was your quarterback. Regardless, he was your quarterback. So you gotta slow down a little bit and really understand why they took Jordan Love. The Green Bay Packers are notorious. This is all part of the former general manager of the Green Bay Packers and personnel guy, Ron Wolf. Take a quarterback every single year. The Green Bay Packers take a quarterback every single year. That's what he believed in. And he set that foundation for Green Bay to find a QB every year. No matter what, you need another quarterback every single year. And Green Bay has been doing that forever. Maybe not drafting a guy in the first round, but if you go back to the draft, and one of the things that is, if you were listening to me, LZ, I know Travis was, that the draft.
Don't be so sure.
Is that the draft is a build up, breakdown, breakdown, build up, breakdown, hype a guy, keep a guy, push a guy, hype a guy, push a guy to the first. That's what they do in the draft. Now, all of a sudden, come draft time, that anticipation that you have of a certain guy going at a certain time in a draft, you're sitting on the edge of your seat. And that anticipation is there, and you expected him to go, ooh, he didn't go. Now you're stuck. You're glued. Now, oh, he didn't go because 2 weeks before, he was going to go in front of Justin Herbert, or he was going to go in front of Tua. And then all of a sudden he falls where he was always going to go. He was always going in that space. And then they take him, and everybody goes, oh, God, no, they reached on him. No, it's not true. They never reached on him. He was always going in that particular area.
There's more to get to in that as well, and we'll continue to have that conversation. But where we jumped off, the idea of three divisions in Major League Baseball. Jeff Passan, who covers MLB for ESPN, he's going to join us next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.